going on, Bulls fans? This is Andrew Perez, Pro Bull, the class of 2018, and you're tuned in to the It's Bruin podcast. Go Bulls.
You have to understand those who came before you. You can't just play for me.
Payoff pitch. Brutcher pulls it. Deep to right field. And this game is tied.
Every day is to make the university extremely proud, to make our alumni extremely proud of what we're doing in the program. Culture and work ethic and all of those things, those are living, breathing things.
Are you kidding me?
This is ripped, the first Hogan, and there is your game winner. The South Florida Bulls can celebrate. They are headed to the Super Regionals for the first time in school history.
If you don't have the expectation of getting to Omaha and playing well in Omaha, you probably shouldn't be coaching Division I baseball.
What's up, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of It's Bruin at McEwen, a USF baseball podcast. I am your host this evening, Adam Cartwright, and today we have a very special guest joining us today, Jim Lauck. He's been the voice of USF Athletics since 1983. He started his career with the Bulls calling basketball games. And then when USF got their football program in 1997, he became the lead announcer for those games as well. As of 2016, he had called every single USF football game in its history. And today you can hear him calling a multitude of sports, including baseball, football, and basketball, amongst others. He's a green and gold legend, and we're very grateful to have him with us tonight. Jim, how are you doing? Again, it's a pleasure. So grateful to have you.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate you guys asking.
Awesome. So have you still called every USF football game in its history, or if not, when did that streak end?
I still got them all. I got an asterisk, though, because COVID year, we didn't travel. So we did the road games actually off a big screen projection in Amalie Arena. And, you know, we pumped in the fake crowd noise and did all the things to make it sound like a normal broadcast. So I still got every game, but there are those few that we didn't travel for that one season.
Yeah, that must have been an interesting experience, just kind of calling the game on the screen and then, you know, kind of knowing that the crowd noise is piped in and not really being able to feed on that energy. I mean, was that kind
That's
of the difference?
The scariest thing I ever did, because we were, you know, we were taking the TV broadcast and, you know, who knows, are they going to have, COVID had everything messed up in terms of personnel and equipment and everything. TV broadcast comes out, I'm staring at a blank screen. I got nothing. So that was my worry that whole road season. We did home games from Raymond James, but road games were nerve-wracking. And the feed never went out, but I was always thinking, what are we going to do if we lose visual? We've got nothing to talk about. But fortunately, it never happened.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, again, that must have been just such an interesting experience. Well, we're actually coming up on the end of an off season, but just a real question, you know, as we kind of gear up into this new athletic season, what's an off season like for you when you know, there's no sports going on?
Well, off seasons are much different for me since 2021, because I retired as a full-time administrator from the department that year. Were I still doing that, it would be meetings and planning and budgeting and getting ready for another full season of South Florida athletics, but I'm kind of living the good life now. I'm a retired independent contractor. All I do is broadcast. So I have a lot of time in the summer to travel a little bit, do some volunteer work and do some family things and gradually get ready for football season at the end of August. So it's kind of a nice pace now for me.
Oh, that is awesome. Well, Jim, with us today is a co-host, Matthew Giardino. He's been patiently waiting, as I kind of forgot to introduce him there in the intro, but I'm going to bring him in now and kick it over to him. Matt, how are you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, doing great. Glad to have Jim on the show. So yeah, Jim, just want to ask you some baseball-specific questions. You know, during your time at USF, you've seen several former Bulls baseball players make it to the MLB, with some of them even having long and successful careers. I'm going to mention a few names, and I'd like to hear what it was like watching them play in college.
Sure.
You know, what made them, what made them stand out? Could you tell early on that they were going to make it big? And are there any traits they seem to share? The first name that I want to bring up will be Ross Glode. He played at USF from 1995 to 1997 and went on to have a 10-year MLB career, earning nearly $10 million, $10 million in today's dollars. What was he like as a college player?
He might be the best pure hitter that I've seen come through South Florida. Tremendous power. Not only home run power, but gap power as well. He always impressed me as one of those guys that went to the plate and kind of looked out at the field and said, that blade of grass, that's where it's going to land. And then he hit it right there. I mean, he just had tremendous bat control. He was a really quiet guy. He might have been a little more outgoing with his teammates. With us, he was always very quiet. Years later, when he got in the USF Hall of Fame and I was administering that group, I coached him up a little bit on his induction speech. And boy, he just hated the whole thought of it. It just wasn't his thing. I think he wound up doing the shortest Hall of Fame induction speech of anybody in the history of the event. But a good guy, a tremendous hitter. Bats were pretty lively then. You had a lot of guys hitting home runs, but even with that, he was a guy I was not surprised made the major leagues. He was that good when he was at South Florida.
And his stats surely back that up. He's still the career leader in a lot of statistical categories. And I am guessing, though, that, you know, if we were to reach out to him and try to get a podcast, it might be a little bit challenging from what you're telling us.
Have some questions ready, but it's not that he's unwilling. He's just always been, at least in my dealings with him, he's been a quiet guy, but he's a really good guy. He was a great player here and was very gracious when he got in the Hall of Fame and was proud to be in that group.
That's awesome. He was a great bull. And, you know, I remember watching him too with my favorite baseball team, the Miami Marlins. Back then, they were the Florida Marlins, but he actually set a record there with another pinch hitter. I think it was the all-time pinch hit duo, but just an anecdote on my side of things. Well, so next up is Scott Hammond. He was drafted out of USF in 1986 in the first round of the MLB draft and played 7 years in the majors. Is there any particular memories from him, or what can you remember from him?
You know, I didn't get to see Scott play quite as much. He was going out as I was coming in. And in those really early days in the early to mid 80s, we weren't broadcasting as many baseball games as we do now. We didn't do the extensive schedule that we do now. We do a few every year. But I got a chance to see him play a few times. Tremendous defensive catcher, great arm. Really a stalwart in those early Eddie Cartieri teams. That was the era right after Coach Roberts retired and Eddie Cartieri moved up from assistant coach to head coach. They had some really good teams in the 80s. That was the Sun Belt Conference, which was very competitive baseball conference. So another guy I'm not surprised made the major leagues because his talent was just head and shoulders above most guys that you saw in that era.
And kind of that brings up a point to me too, is, what was it like seeing those teams like the Eddie Cartieri teams and Robin Roberts? You know, what were those guys like as managers? Kind of going off track a little bit here, but I would love to hear something about that.
Well, Robin Roberts, I could tell you stories all day long. He was a great guy, and he was one of those guys where if you didn't know your baseball history and you didn't know what he did in the major leagues, he wasn't going to tell you that. But he'd answer questions, and he'd tell you stories if you asked. I'll tell you one real quick Robin Roberts story. First time I met him, I'm in my office. This is a few years after he retires, and somebody comes in and says, "Hey, Coach Roberts would like you to come to his house in Temple Terrace. He needs a favor." No idea what this could possibly be about. My first thought was, Coach Roberts knows who I am. That's great. I wouldn't have guessed that. So I get in my car, I go to Temple Terrace. This is probably 1990, maybe. He's probably in his 60s, maybe 70s. And I pull up in his driveway. He's on the roof and he's working on the roof. And he sees me and says, "I'll come down, I'll come down." He gets on the ladder and comes down. And that was the first time I met him. And it turns out, you know, he knew I was the radio guy and he wanted me to take his Hall of Fame induction speech, the MLB Hall of Fame. He had it on a big old reel-to-reel tape and he didn't have a reel-to-reel tape player. So he wanted me to transfer it, and, you know, modern technology, he wanted me to put it on cassette tape. So I took it back to the office and I transferred it. And later on, I brought him the cassette tape. And that's really where I first met him, because I missed him when he was coaching. I came in after he had retired as head coach. But that was my first meeting with him. And then I got to know him better at alumni events and everything as the years went on. But he was just a great guy. And again, you'd never know what he accomplished in Major League Baseball if you didn't know your history. And Eddie Cartieri, you know, was there for 20 years afterwards. I'm so happy that Eddie got into the Hall of Fame going in with the new class. That's long overdue. You know, a guy that won in multiple conferences, won when the bats were dead, won when the bats were lively, recruited the right guys in both of those areas. He won in multiple conferences, 9 NCAA tournaments, really overdue to get in the USF Hall of Fame. So I was really thrilled to see that earlier this month. And I'm looking forward to seeing him this fall at the induction ceremony. It's going to be great to have him in that group.
Well, that's really cool that you've gotten to know both of them over the years. And obviously you got some really interesting stories with both of them. And, you know, Robin Roberts, there's a very, very, you know, you get lost for words describing his MLB career. He just did such an amazing job. And even when he was here, he set the groundwork for everything that we have today.
He brought credibility. It was a very, very young program at the time. And to have a guy like that on that primitive field, because if you remember, even Red McEwen Field, up in its later years, if you go back to the 70s, and Ken Erickson will tell you this because he played for Coach Roberts in that era too, that was about a grass field and not a whole lot more at that point. And to get the kind of players that both of those guys recruited to USF in that era was pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, that's unbelievable. And you know, speaking of players, there's a few others that we kind of want to cover in terms of guys that, you know, they've gone on to have successful major league careers. A couple of them are Dan Otero, Dave Island, Kevin Quackenbush, Austin Adams, and more recently guys like Shane McClanahan, Jimmy Herget, and Orion Kirkring. Is there any fond memories that you have of any of those guys, or if there's any players that I may have missed?
Well, Shane, I will always be grateful for, because he got me my only no-hitter, that one that he split with Carson Ragsdale a few years ago, and I had a chance to broadcast that. Randy Fontanez had gotten one a couple years prior, and because I'm a moron, I took that night off, didn't do the game, and missed calling a no-hitter. So Shane got me one a couple years later, so I'm grateful for that. It's interesting, though, of all those guys you mentioned, I will tell you that at least in their time at USF, the guy with the most devastating stuff out of that group, in my mind, was Kevin Quackenbush. He was just unbelievable. He would make guys look so silly at times. You know, we sit right lined up with home plate. So we see all the movement, and he was one of those guys. I don't think he could have thrown a ball straight if somebody told him he had to. It's just everything moved. And, you know, all those guys were outstanding, you know, guys like Austin Adams and even Orion to a degree found themselves a little bit after USF. You know, they had some success here, but they really took off in the pro ranks. But Quackenbush, I thought, was just amazing during his time at South Florida.
And, I mean, obviously he had some devastating stuff with his movement. Is there anything else in particular about Kevin Quackenbush that you thought maybe, you know, had him have a competitive edge?
Well, in looking back, and I'm going by memory on this, I ought to be looking at game logs, but my recollection is that they decided early on in Quackenbush's career that he was going to be the closer. And I think that really benefited him. He had the mentality for it. And again, you know, I think of a guy like Orion Kirkering, who was on a pitching staff that, you know, quite frankly, had some holes in that time. And they would plug in Orion everywhere. I mean, I remember him pitching in relief one day and starting the next day. And he was good enough to be able to pull that off, but that's not easy. And what I remember about Quackenbush was that he was such a bulldog in that closer role. And it was just the perfect role for
him. That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. And kind of just wrapping up that segment a little bit, we're going to shift gears now to more broadly USF related topics, all-time USF moments and memories. Obviously, you've been part of so many unforgettable moments in USF athletics. I'd love to hear your top five memories. You know, you can take us through them in any order you like, or if you prefer, we can count them down from 5 to 1. But what's your first memory that comes to mind?
All right, I did my homework. I thought about this a little bit. So I got five for you. They're in no particular order, if that's all right.
That works, yep.
All right.
And since you guys are baseball guys, I'll start with baseball. And you know how it is with moments like this. I'll tell you, first of all, when we talk about something memorable, most times it's good, not always good. So one of these is a not so good in terms of things going on around it. But also there's a professional and a personal, you know, of how you remember things. So this first one is kind of a combination of that. And I'm thinking about the Drew Brutcher home run in Austin in the Super Regional in 2021. Mm-hmm. For me, I had already told the department I was going to retire. And we had started to talk about continuing on broadcasting, but it wasn't set in stone yet. And I went to Austin knowing that there was a chance that when the last out was made, wherever it was, that was my last game. And I was at peace with that. But, you know, you do think about that a little bit, that if things don't work out as we're starting to plan, that this is the end of a pretty long road. So I was pretty invested in hoping that we got out of Austin and got to Omaha, came in as big underdogs, and Drew hit that home run to tie it up late. And that was the first time that I started thinking, well, you know, I know it's improbable that we can take 2 out of 3 from Texas, but how improbable was winning the conference tournament as a middle seed, and how improbable was it getting the Gainesville Regional? So maybe we got a chance to go on here. And of course it didn't work out that way, but that's how I'll always remember Drew's home run, is when that ball stayed fair, I could see Omaha. And that was the first time in all the USF baseball games I've broadcast where I could say that and think that. So that's why that one made my top five as a memorable moment.
Yeah, I think that was a memorable moment for, especially for my brother and I, we had the opportunity to not only joined the team in Clearwater and Gainesville, but we also made the trip to Austin, Texas. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen the clips, obviously, but all the fans jumping that traveled to Austin as well. We were all jumping up and down and screaming. It's almost like an out of body experience, and I'm sure you that too.
I want to interject real quick too. I almost gave my wife a heart attack because she wasn't watching the game, and I'm just kind of sitting in a corner of my house. Just I was quiet for most of it, you know. It was a nerve wracking kind of close game, and then the home run happened, and yeah, I bursted and shouted and yelled, you know, some stuff, and she came out running. It was crazy.
Yeah, great moment.
Awesome. Yeah. So moving on to the next one, Jim, what's your next moment for us?
All right, next one I'll give you, and this is another professional / personal one. Men's basketball NCAA tournament 1992, where this time we didn't win the conference tournament, so we had to get in as an at-large, and there was question whether we would or not. Yeah. We get in and find out we're going to Boise, Idaho. And this is against the backdrop of me becoming a father that very same week. So we bring the child home and I'm off to Boise. And I don't know if you've ever gone to Boise. If there's ever a you can't get there from here place, it's Boise. We flew out, we went Chicago, Salt Lake, Boise. And then we flew charter home, but we couldn't get the charter for 4 days after we played. So we were out there, played a 2-hour basketball game. I'm out there for 5 days. Meanwhile, my son is home for the very first time, and I've got real bills to pay with my wife when I got back because I'm halfway across the country for a week while all that's going on. So that's memorable for me because of those things. But the other thing that was special about 92 was the regional there and the type of people that were there. It was unbelievable. LSU was there. Indiana was there. Georgetown obviously was there. That was the Bulls' opponent. So you could walk through the hotel and see Bobby Knight, Shaquille O'Neal, Alonzo Mourning. I mean, all these guys in Boise, Idaho, capital of the basketball world in the middle of nowhere. Bill Walton worked it for CBS, and he did our halftime show on the radio broadcast with us. So we got to spend some time with Bill Walton that day. Just a really special time. They couldn't pull off the win. But it was great. You know, you felt like basketball was really building something, two NCAAs in 3 years. You know, and again, for me, the combination of personal and professional kind of made it a really memorable few days.
Yeah, that's an incredible story. And to see all those guys that ended up making the NBA Hall of Fame. And on top of that, you know, obviously the personal story about you know, not being able to be there for your son's birth, but ultimately, you know, you have a story to tell, and obviously, you know, you're probably a great father. And that
I'm
didn't,
still paying for it, believe me.
Yeah, that didn't affect anything too significantly, but that's really cool. And moving on to the next, you know, the next memory that you have. What's your third memory?
This is a little bit similar. Go back two more years, 1990 NCAA tournament, again, men's basketball, winning the Sun Belt Conference in Birmingham, and then going on to their first NCAA tournament. That was my eighth season of doing men's basketball radio play-by-play, and I had never called a conference tournament win. Seven straight years out in the first round.
Wow.
So to go to Birmingham and win three straight and get to the NCAA tournament was something really, really special. I'm not sure I ever thought I'd see it or be a small part of it. I was so glad for Bobby Pascal and his staff because they had really struggled their first 3 years. I don't know what the fate of that staff might have been if things didn't turn around in that fourth year, but fortunately it did. And I'll tell you my favorite moment about that whole thing. Conference championship, so we got an automatic bid. Fly back from Birmingham, and we set up the donor and fan party to watch the selection show. And we have it on the old, in the old special event center on campus, long since torn down, used to be near the Marshall Center. And we put up the CBS TV broadcast on the big screen and watched as the teams and the pairings were put up. Field of 64, no play-ins then. And two by two, the matches go up and this guy's playing that guy and these guys are traveling here. And it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. And we get to the point, 64 teams in the tournament, well, 62 of them are on the board. And South Florida isn't one of them. And as it turned out, Bulls fans know, the last two that went up were Arizona and South Florida. But I'll never forget, in that little time before the name finally went up, I was standing next to one of our major donors at the time. And just before it finally went up, when 62 teams were up there and we weren't, he turned to me and in the most perfect stage whisper possible said, "They know they have to put us in, right?" And I'll never forget that. And then the next moment, our name popped up and we were in. So that was a great experience. We went out to Long Beach and played Arizona and again, didn't get the win, but just a great experience and one that I was so happy for that staff and those players because they had really worked hard through some very difficult seasons to get to that point.
Yeah, that's really cool that they ended up making the tournament that year and they ended up going on a couple more good seasons after that as well. But, you know, that brings me to the next memory. What would that be?
Okay, now I'm going to go to football. And this is the one that's good and bad because it was a real mixture of emotions like I've never encountered before with any USF project. The football win at Notre Dame. On the one hand, a tremendous victory, a broadcaster's dream, great storylines, Skip Holtz coming back and beating Notre Dame, massive underdog South Florida gets the win, going through all the weather delays and all the obstacles to win that game against the backdrop of losing Leroy Selman. And it was just such a strange combination of emotions. You know, you'd have a great play for South Florida and you'd get up and then you'd come back down to earth remembering what the situation was. You know, when we got there the night before and I had actually gone to Notre Dame the night before. I was going to speak to one of their alumni groups. And just as they were getting ready to start that, my phone rang and I got the update that, you know, Leroy was gravely ill. And it just weighed on all of us so much. And by the time the game was going on, you know, there was pretty much a lot of information that things weren't going to improve and things weren't going to be better when we got home the next day. And it was just, it was very difficult. You know, I think about I go back and listen to that broadcast and, you know, we talked a little bit about it in the pregame show. And then we thought it was best to let the game take center stage and go from there. But it was just a very curious set of emotions. One of the great wins in USF athletics history, not USF football history, USF athletics history, but also in my mind, the worst day in USF athletics history. And having those kind of juxtapose in that situation made it something I'll never forget. It was a hard broadcast to get through at times.
Yeah, and with the go ahead, John.
Sorry, it's just like it feels like if USF was going to do like their own 30 for 30s, that'd be a really good kind of plot line around that day with everything going on.
But it was difficult. You know, how the team played was amazing, especially going through all the delays they had. There were two major delays.
Yeah. Yeah.
Years later, I know Derek Sharp does such a great job on Bulls Unlimited, kind of editing down those games and everything. And years later, he was telling me, you know, he took the original tape of that and made it a little shorter for broadcast. And he said, you know how long that broadcast was? And I said, well, I got to imagine it was long. And he said, pregame to postgame, it was 9 hours and 18 minutes. So think about that for a college football game, you know, plus pre and post. But it shows you the remarkable performance of that team. And again, you just wanted to celebrate it. It was just unbelievable what they accomplished. But the reality was what the reality was. And that's why that one is so memorable to me. You know, we talked earlier about the COVID year. Well, the first game we didn't travel for was at Notre Dame. And I was almost glad I didn't make that trip. I didn't want to see the place again after that, to be honest with you. It was kind of a relief to not go up there for that game. But it was powerful stuff, and it still sticks with you more than a decade later.
Yeah, definitely. And can you actually tell us a little bit more, like, you know, it not necessarily in extent, but what Leroy Solomon meant to USF athletics? Obviously, he meant so much, and you know, he was a great player and also a great administrator at USF. Can you briefly talk about that?
Yeah, he was special. He had time for everybody, and one of the things that I always enjoyed, you know, he was so gracious about finding time for everybody, but a lot of people did pull on him a little bit, you know, trying to get him to talk with them or sign something or something. One of the things I really enjoyed during his athletic director term on the road, a lot of times he would come into our broadcast booth during the game and he'd just sit behind us, and he wasn't going on the air. He wasn't listening to us. I knew why he was there. He was looking for a quiet place where he could watch the game and not have people pulling on him and everything. But Mark Robinson and I enjoyed that so much when he would just come and sit in the booth behind us quietly, wouldn't say a word, you know, but just was enjoying a peaceful time and, you know, knew that we were busy and weren't going to bother him. So I think about that a lot. Really good administrator, obviously, what he did in terms of lending credibility to the department and to football. The first time I saw him on campus, he joined the department in 93. So it was 4 years before the inaugural game. And I'm sitting in my office, typical day, you know, it's 6:30 at night and I can't get out of there. And the marketing director comes in and comes up to me and says, come here a minute, I got to show you something. And takes me over to his window and looks out on campus. And there's Paul Griffin, the athletic director, walking with Leroy Selman. And they're coming up to the building, and you can tell they're going to have some kind of meeting, and it's after hours, and nobody else is seeing this except the two guys who can't finish their day and can't get out of the office. And the marketing guy turned to me and said, do you know what this means? And of course, he had pieced it together. This was putting together the position and bringing Leroy to South Florida. And it changed everything. And when he was gone, you lost your moral compass. It's not to say there weren't great people throughout leadership in that department. There were, but you lost the guy you counted on the most, and not just for football stuff, not just for athletic stuff. He was one of a kind. And I'm so grateful I had the chance to work with him as long as I did, but it's easy to get greedy with that. I wish I had a lot more time working for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's did so much for USF, and obviously, you know, without him, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in today, especially when it comes to the football program. But that's pretty much it. We just want, you know, one more core memory from USF, and then I'll kick it over to Adam, and he's got some closing segments.
All right, I'm going to finish up with a little happier one. Fifth one is the inaugural football game. And just how much enjoyment that brought everybody. For us, you know, it was years of work to get up to that day, years of work. And that's why it's probably the best of this five. The best memories are the ones you share with a lot of people. And there were so many people that made that inaugural game possible, marketing guys and ops guys and coaches and players and student athletes and administrators, on and on and on, driving up to the stadium and seeing people tailgating with USF stuff. I mean, I didn't even think about that until I saw it. And then you realized it and it all became real. And the chance to broadcast that first game for me, that was the first football game of any kind that I ever broadcast. And I was just in the right place at the right time. And it's not a shining moment in terms of broadcast quality in my mind. I listened back to that tape and I'm not crazy about it, but I was learning as I go. The thing I remember about that, the marketing guys had a lot of sponsors. And they wanted to take care of every single one of them on the air. And, you know, you can do that to a degree in TV because you got pictures. People can see the play. You don't have to describe everything. On radio, it's pretty hard. So they would just bring these guys in, and I'm, you know, hey, I got to tell you, Bob from Bob's Hardware is coming up. They did a great job with the locker room, so I need you to do 5 minutes with them. So, you know, I'd get through one of them and I'd go to a commercial break and then they'd bring in Bob and he'd sit next to me. And the joke of this whole thing, of course, is that South Florida scores 80 points. So they're scoring a touchdown like every third play. And you go back to that tape and it's like, you know, 87-yard touchdown run for South Florida. So, Bob, you got a big sale on hammers next week. You know, it wasn't quite that bad, but it felt like it. Yeah. And that's another one with Derek Sharp. I told him when he was editing that down for replay, I said, Derek, you got to have my back on this when you put this on Unlimited. But it was just so many crazy things like that. And then to have the game unfold that way. But it was the culmination of so much hard work from so many people, some of them that even left USF by that time, you know, people that had worked in marketing and gotten ticket sales plans together 3 and 4 years earlier when we were trying to get it off the ground and everything. So that's the best one. I think most Bulls fans would probably tell you that, that it's the kind of the shining moment of all the things that have happened, not only because we actually had a football program, but we had a full stadium, we had a big win, and all of our dreams and all of our hopes were still intact after that first game. And fortunately, a lot of them have come through over the years, and hopefully more will in the upcoming years.
Definitely. I think that's a great summary of, you know, all the great moments and capping it off with, you know, arguably the biggest, which is the start of the football program. And you know, I think it's amazing that you were able to balance all those different advertisements coming in and still be able to call all those touchdowns too. But that's amazing. Well, thank you so much for, you know, going over those five moments. And now I'll kick it over to Adam to wrap up a couple segments.
Hey Jim, real quick before we get out of here, before we go, I just kind of want to learn a little bit more about you and your perspective. And so I guess we'll start off with looking at your bio, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but how does a young man from Rochester, New York, make his way to sunny Tampa, Florida? Is that something by happenstance, just or there's some connective tissue there?
Well, as it turned out, my parents retired to St. Petersburg, and I was scuffling around trying to break into the business after graduating college and trying to figure out how to pay school loans and do all the things you need to do. I was in Colorado at the time, and I decided to come back to Florida and camp out with them for a year and get myself back out to the mountains after a year. And as it turned out, I wound up getting a job here at a radio station on 570 AM, which was a news talk station at the time. And they had the contract to broadcast South Florida men's basketball. And the 83-84 season was approaching. And to this day, I don't know what happened, but apparently, the university decided they wanted to make a change in the play-by-play situation, and they came to that decision about a week before the first game, which was a great benefit to me because they didn't have time to go look around and find somebody experienced. So they're trying to figure out what to do, and I'm right there at the right radio station, and here I am, and let me make a tape for you. So I went up and sat in the top row of the Sun Dome and made a tape of a practice, which heaven knows what that must have sounded like. But given the time frame and everything, they decided to plug me in, and that's kind of how it landed. I never went back to Colorado except on vacation, and that's what got me started at South Florida. Just a classic right place, right time, and things worked out from there.
It's awesome. You've just kind of been able to grow with the athletics, kind of grow with it professionally, and then kind of watch it kind of grow in itself at the same time. What was it like kind of walking in that first day, athletics, and then kind of how does it compare to maybe when you're walking in, I'd say getting ready for this next season? Maybe you can kind of date back to, before you were officially retired, but kind of the difference between the growth between then and now.
Totally different, as you can imagine. When I started, it was such a smaller department, and a lot of us had to double up on jobs and pitch in here and pitch in there. That was probably one of the bigger adjustments I had to make in my career, honestly, is when the department started to flourish and grow, and we added a whole bunch of people, and I'd still be, well, let me help over there. I can do this. And somebody'd have to put their arm around me and say, Jim, we have a three-person department now, and they take care of that. Go do your own thing. So it was much different. But I vividly recall two computers in the whole department. You had to sign up to use one. I remember the main 813-974-2125 phone number, which was the only number, and the
Nice.
receptionist would handle it and forward the call to you. If you didn't catch her forwarding it, you came back to your office and you had a bunch of little call sheets on your desk. Much, much different. Much different in terms of the type of staffing and the type of student athletes, the type of facilities. And I would tell you the differences between 1983 and when I stopped being full-time in 2021, probably about the same as the differences between 2021 and 2024. It's unbelievable how different it is with NIL, with all the things that have changed. It's amazing to me how Michael Kelly is building that department, the positive changes there. It was great when I worked there. I worked under Michael in the early 2000s when he was an associate AD, and then again his first 3 years as athletic director. So I'm used to the positive impact he has on the department, but what he's done in the last couple of years is really, really amazing, the amount of change. I walk in there now and it's hard to recognize the place, and I haven't been gone that long, so it's a clear sign of progress. I think they're well on their way to good things ahead.
That's awesome. Well, you know, what's been maybe the reason that you kind of hung around South Florida and stayed here for so long? You know, usually sometimes you see a lot of people move around in broadcasting. You know, what's been the glue that's kept you here?
Well, they always told me I could stay. That's part of it, especially in broadcasting. A lot of times they tell you you can't stay.
Yep.
But to me, I think it was two things. You know, my family loved the area. We enjoyed being in Tampa. We had extended family here, and that was a positive. And then the other thing was South Florida, especially in that time, still can say this now, but especially in that time, there was always a really big, tangible goal that I didn't want to miss. We're going from the Sun Belt to the Metro. Well, I got to be here for that. We're going to the Metro to see USA. We're starting football. We're redoing the Sun Dome. We're building a baseball state. We're building a softball. We're building a soccer state. We're building the settlement. Well, I got to be a part of that. I can't miss it. And, you know, I lined up a pretty good amount of facilities where I did the first broadcast in. I got everyone in the athletic district. So that was part of it, is that, you know, I would always weigh it against, well, I know in 2 years we're going to be doing this. Do I really want to be somewhere else when that's happening? And the answer was always no. And then the years pile up and the state of Florida pension gets closer and closer. So it starts to kind of snowball a little bit, but I've never regretted it.
Well, look, we've been very lucky to have you as fans. I think I can speak for, yeah, just about all of us at Bruin. I mean, you've been the voice of the Bulls, you know, for our whole fandom, and we've been very lucky for that. I mean, it's kind of a bucket list item right here. We're checking off, getting to have this conversation. So I do just have one last question before we go. It might be a little off script, but I think you'll be okay. The general buzz around USF athletics as we head into this athletic season, just with the three successive hires in the three major sports, what Coach Fernandez and Coach Erickson are able to do with women's basketball and softball, I just feel like the buzz for this upcoming season has really kind of never really been higher. You know, are you feeling that? Do you think we're kind of in store for something big at USF?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've certainly been that way in individual sports. But I think the collective athletic department is experiencing that a little bit. In other words, the number of sports that are really having high expectations. You know, women's soccer picks second
yes.
in the conference. Very positive outlook for volleyball after the run they had last year. It's not just men's and women's basketball and football. It's really top to bottom. Boy, track and field is bordering on unbelievable what they've done. So, yeah, I think that's the case. And, I, you know, I think it bodes very well, obviously, for the department in terms of the future and where things may land in the landscape of college athletics. You have to go through and stay healthy and execute and do the things you're expected to do. And I think football is feeling that a little bit as well for this coaching staff and these players. It is a new experience for them. You have to deliver. They certainly understand that. But the opportunity is there almost top to bottom in the athletic programs to really show some progress. And it is unique, I think, in the last few years, just for the depth of it in terms of number of programs.
Yeah, that is awesome. Well, thank you, Jim, for joining us. Like I said, we really appreciate you taking the time to chat it up with us. Really some interesting stories and kind of enlightened us about a lot of stuff I didn't know. We really, really look forward to hearing you call games for this upcoming season. Again, just thank you for being here.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It was fun.
All right. And Bulls fans, that's going to be all that we have for this week. But We do have a lot of programming coming up throughout the season as we lead into our fall ball previews and into the fall ball season. We want to ask you to go ahead and like and subscribe to our podcast and go ahead and turn the notifications on so you know exactly when we're going to drop these podcasts. But until then, we'll talk to you next week. Go Bulls.